welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Hey, we got to do this podcast fast because we just got past a winter storm, which in terms of how Minnesota measures winter storms, it was kind of annoying.
Wimpy.
Yeah, I mean, I got like maybe 5 inches where I am. I don't know how many you got. You were farther south.
I didn't even slow down going to work today.
Yeah.
I get into work and there are all these people not there. Now, when I got into work today, Joe, none of the supervisors were in.
Oh, really?
So you know what I did? I ran with scissors. I ate candy for breakfast. And then I opened the windows when the air conditioner was on. Because, you know, we had no supervision. So I could do whatever I wanted.
You know what I did?
What was that?
I got in my truck and I moved it around the block in four-wheel drive because I had fresh snow to plow through. It was mostly because I had blocked off the garage.
Yeah.
I figured I'd park the truck back there so all the snow would be on my truck and then I wouldn't have to shovel the garage.
Right.
Or the driveway. And then I just blew it around. And they declared a snow emergency, so I'm now parked in the back again, which is fine. But what the real problem is we're going to get, oh my God, Corey, the polar vortex is on the way. Sorry, I just panicked.
Is that like Polar Boy from the Legion of Superheroes?
More frigid than that. They're talking.
Oh,
matter of fact, you know it's bad.
I think I was married to her.
You might have been. You know it's bad when the news, who normally shies away from bad images, are showing images of people frostbitten. You know how your fingers turn black and they blister up and get red. And they're trying to scare people because, you know, we're Minnesotans. We're stupid. Hey, polar vortex, let's go outside and grab a beer. Let's go swimming. You know, we had the lunar eclipse, blood moon, super wolf, whatever it was a couple weeks ago. And it was frigid temperatures. We're all outside clicking it with cameras as best we can.
Well, of course.
It's not that it's going to get cold. I mean, it's like, what, on Wednesday, it's going to be 7 below is the high, 24 below is the low. It hasn't been this cold since 1996, like a decade or so ago. And, you know, they're telling people because, you know, well, they're going to send old Junior out to the bus. And, you know, kids just don't like wearing hats and gloves. I don't know. I did in my day. So, I mean, they're trying to scare us with, here's what's going to happen to your kid. It's going to happen in 3 minutes. You know, you're going to be a dumbass trying to shovel outside. You're going to lose your ears. Yep, don't need no hat. Well, you don't need no ears neither. So we got to get this here podcast.
Well, with only one.
We got to get revved up this here podcast quick because I'm going to go bury myself under a blanket in my closet with a quart of chocolate soda and my entire collection of Secret Society of Supervillains and not come out until, I don't know, maybe next week when we got to record. Of course, by the time this here drops, this will all be passed. We'll either have been frozen solid, like in the, what was that movie where the big vortex kid, the deep freeze or something?
The Day After Tomorrow.
Yeah, where we were all like frozen solid in showers and things like that. It is like, or, you know, we'll do like a buddy of mine. He's going to Orlando. I didn't like him anyways. We gotta get some potting done before we freeze to death.
Well,
this may be the last thing we say before we're frozen as two podsicles.
I'm actually quite toasty warm.
Well, yeah, you're protected by all those omnibus. I only got half a wall of omnibus.
That's right. I got omnibuses. I got hoodies because I'm not the best dressed man in comics anymore. I could wear hoodies and t-shirts under the hoodies, and I'm all set. And it's kind of, the bad thing is, you know how I've been sleeping at the group home so much? They don't need me as much anymore because of all the changes going through. So I'm only sleeping there 4 nights this week. So that means I have to pay for heat in my house 3 nights out of this week.
Corey, I'm going to tell you something that'll scare you.
I'm already scared.
It's so cold, I'm wearing pants.
Well, it's about goddamn time. And at least you're smart enough to know that, oh, they declared a snow emergency. I better move my vehicle. I had a friend who lived in St. Paul, and four different times in one winter season, I got the call. They gave me a ticket for parking on the street, and they didn't tell me about the snow emergency. You remember 3 months ago when I told you, here's this app, and it'll ping you when there's a snow emergency and tell you where you can move? Well, I didn't want to download it.
Oh, you don't like to watch local news? You don't like to go on your website for your city or county government? Yeah. You know, it's whatever.
Yep. So we've got it better than other people. Because did you hear what happened at the DC Comics on last week?
We were, I guess I sent a few links your way, and that was just, it was just mostly rumor at the time, but I guess there's been some bloodletting.
Yes, they let go a few people, and the thing that got me was they said well, I have the entire memo, but what they said, you know, they announced that a few people were laid off, and it ended up being only seven, mostly people in production. But they said there will be no one laid off in editorial yet. But they will be looking at things come August. I have a copy of the memo they sent out, though.
Oh, our spies are working for us. Good.
Damn right. This was sent to employees at DC. DC is going back to its roots of delivering epic stories with our world-class characters, stories, and brands. Being a premier house of storytelling will never go out of style, and we intend to ultimately super serve our existing fans while providing new compelling content that engages and excites even more fans around the globe. Rest assured, the direct market is at the heart of our business and will continue to be our greatest strengths.
I'm sorry, I was thinking about Star Trek, the animated series. Was there anything substantial in there?
Basically, they're saying that...
don't panic! All is well!
Don't panic. We're not going to abandon the direct market. Today has been a challenging day. We have made organizational changes across DC we believe will help strengthen and evolve the division for future success. Yeah, corporate doublespeak. With these changes come difficult decisions, which we take very seriously. Who's making the most money? Who's not generating money? You seven guys! We recognize and appreciate that all of our employees have made considerable contributions to our business, and that it is difficult to lose colleagues, many of whom have been here for a long time and have made an important impact on DC, and many of them moved all the way across the goddamn country to keep their jobs. We thank them for their hard work and dedication to DC. As we're booting them out the door. As always, we are committed to taking care of our employees, and we'll be as thoughtful as possible with those who are impacted by the changes.
You know, that was about as much fun as listening to math. You know, seriously, I'm online. I'm looking for somebody trying to say something nice about Minnesota right now, and I just can't find anybody. And I mean, you're just, I don't know. Seriously, when I heard about the DC stuff, I was kind of thinking, how long is it going to be until we see IDW publishing a like DC Adventures type comic with their characters to go for a new audience rather than the almost impenetrable JLA type stuff they're doing now?
Well, remember I talked a few weeks ago about how DC's not putting out as many books? They started these new lines, you know, the New Age of Heroes. That's pretty much all dead. The Black Label line had one book that got them in a lot of trouble and now is delayed.
Anything.
And most of the books they were putting out every 2 weeks are now monthly. So they're putting out less product.
I wonder if somebody is just like, you know what, the problem is the direct market, not our books.
Oh, of course there are.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that, you know, they're expanding outside the direct market, and they're successful. You know, the Walmart books are so successful, they'd added two more. They're making headway into the young adult and scholastic markets, which is where a lot of money is. And in this, they're saying, well, you know, we're going to get back to the basics. It reminds me.
A bit on the Walmart thing before we go on. I'm curious, and there's almost no way to answer this. How many of the Walmart things are actually what we would call civilians, non-comic readers, versus guys like you and up until recently me, who go there just looking for the books because we want them?
If they're selling, they don't care who it's selling to.
That's the thing. I mean, it's not growing the market.
Well, we don't know.
Are they selling better than... I guess what I'm waiting for is to see how the sales of the so-called... the promised graphic novel will be when they take all this new stuff and publish it for the first time as a graphic novel. I think that'll be the selling point. I mean, will these graphic novels be DOA as soon as they're offered to the direct market, or will they just will actually make a difference? Anyways, you were saying.
It reminds me a lot of when WCW was part of, you know, Time Warner. Now it's Warner Communication. They got rid of Time.
Yep.
And Time Warner got bought by AOL. And at the time, AOL was making fistloads of money. Now, not so much. But they came in and they wanted to look over the books and anything that wasn't making a huge profit had to be cut.
Now, you remember, too, I've talked about this ad nauseum, how Time Warner was arranged as a vertical company.
Yeah.
As opposed to Disney, which is a horizontal company. So if you're going to have a Captain Marvel movie coming up in February, oh, you know, Disney's all hands on deck to make Captain Marvel big. Records, comics, toys,
they
whatever.
Just did an origin story. They've got an omnibus coming out. They've got epic collections coming out. Their trade paperbacks are coming out. A new Captain Marvel number one. Whereas over at DC, you got a Shazam movie coming out. And, well, they canceled the expensive hardcover. There's nothing reprinting the old stories. And
Just because the movies have this big event doesn't mean the rest of the division is going to do anything, because everybody's their own little fiefdom and they don't necessarily have to cooperate with the other ones. That's why AOL failed when they took over. I mean, they thought, we have this synergy, we'll have a property, it'll go across the departments. Well, you know, just because you got Babylon 5 over here and some syndicated TV market doesn't mean we're going to do any toys with them or make a comic book or blah, 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 so on and so on. I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying that's the way it is. That's the reality if you're going to be dealing with, what's it called now? Just Time or just Warner? Or
is it's AT&T? Warner Communications, but Warner Communication is being bought up by AT&T.
Yeah. So, and good luck
so
with that.
So you know that they're coming in and looking through the books. And if they look at DC Comics and go, wow, in the last 2 years, you've lost 20% of your sales and about 7-8% of your market share. What are you doing about that? I think that's why people got fired, because the first thing you do is you cut costs. And the easiest way to cut costs in a corporation is you get rid, and they can say, well, we got rid of 5% of our workforce. When I was at American Express Financial Advisors, the stock market in 2000 started taking a dump. So what did they do? Well, where can we cut? We can't cut anything that's making money. HR doesn't make money. They cost money. Outsource it. And, of course, 3 years later, they had to bring it back in because all the mistakes and everything were causing lawsuits and losing money. At DC, you know, they probably were told 5%. You got to get rid of 5% of your outlay. And they're not going to get rid of it. The easiest way to make money in a corporation is to cut costs. And your number one cost is labor. Yep. That's why whenever you're seeing all this stuff, when the stock tumbles, first thing they do, they announce layoffs. Because they could go to the stockholders and go, see, we're cutting our costs. So DC's, I think them being pulled deeper into the corporate unit is going to cause stuff like this. And as a long-term fan, I'm concerned that they're talking about, we're going to redouble our efforts in the direct market. Oh, God, last time you did that was the New 52.
Maybe they'll bring everything back. Like I said, everything before New 52 is pretty much DOA. Nobody cares about it unless it's like classic stuff. Maybe they'll do an old 52 and a return to Crisis on not Final First Crisis. I don't know.
Well, we haven't even finished up the stuff from Rebirth yet.
Yarg.
There was this, oh, we have a 2-year plan for Rebirth. Well, that was 3 years ago. And the plan always seems to be make the comics look like it's the 90s again. And I don't want to keep beating this horse, but I do want to tell people 1992 was 25 years ago. Those people are not going to come back.
That's when Babylon 5 started, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Serendipity, baby!
Or, you know, it's like with wrestling. I hear all these fans, oh, you need to bring back the Attitude Era. You realize the Attitude Era ended 18 years ago. The young men, you know, in their early 20s, they're in their 40s now. They're not going to come back to watch wrestling. You've got to cultivate a new audience. Bellyache can complain all you want about Marvel. Marvel's number one, and they've cultivated a new audience. DC tried to go back to grab that old audience. They're gone. And I was thinking about it today on the way home. Joe, you started reading in like 1978, right?
Well, comics anyways.
You started reading comics in 1978.
Cereal boxes, you know, Howard the Duck tapes, you know, things like that.
Would you have gotten excited if one of the major comic book companies said, hey, guess what? We're bringing back romance books and the EC horror stories.
It didn't mean anything to me.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's why when I read that book Comic Implosion from Tomorrow, I found it interesting because the DC implosion was happening while I started reading comics. I didn't care.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't reading DC at the time.
But the whole push for nostalgia, I say it all the time. Those people are gone. Nostalgia gets you a big pop when you start it, and that pop fades really, really fast. When WWE brought back Hulk Hogan the first time, woo, woo, big deal. And he did his tour around and everything. By the third time around, they were doing less business than they were before they brought in Hogan. Why? Because, all right, what do you got now? You got this 56-year-old guy who's, you know, you're building your company around. He was big. He was big when I was a kid. I'm not a kid anymore. It's all about tidying up, isn't it?
It is.
And you sent me a link to the thing that everybody is all hot about. It's the
all hot about. Well,
what is her name?
Marie Kondo, a Japanese woman who's apparently she's had a book out for a number of years.
Yeah.
And her big thing is tidying up. The big thing with her is, and you've been making jokes about it, and I didn't realize
Damn
it
right.
until I realized what it was, is she said, if you have something in your life, look at it. If it brings you joy, keep it. If it doesn't, thank it and let it go, which I guess is a very spiritual thing to do. I mean, you've seen spiritualism and in other religions and things like that, where they believe objects have a spirit inside them. And that's part of her shtick.
Yeah, thank I've seen service and let it go.
I've seen other things like if it costs you $20, let it go because you can replace it for $20 later on. When I worked at Sears and we were going through, you know, and this was Sears catalog era, we're going through things and the boss is like, you know what? If you haven't used it in a year, toss it out. If you can replace it, toss it. So there's different systems. She's taken off because she's got this Netflix show and all of a sudden it's a big rage to declutter. And, you know, you've heard me going on and on about stuff too, because, you know, I've been purging my collection for various reasons. And I thought it was kind of interesting because as I thought about it, you and I have very, unique ways of looking at stuff. I mean, we're buying probably more than we ever had before, but I'm selling my stuff, whereas I don't think I've ever heard you selling anything you've ever bought, even if it's something you don't necessarily like. And I'm kind of curious to see how do you, and you know, I don't want to get into, you know, how do you store your collection, because we did a podcast on that, or how do you take care of it, because we've actually talked about that. But how do you declutter your stuff so you can find what you want, or do you, how do you enjoy the stuff you have?
For the regular monthly comics, if it's older than like 5-6 years that I've read it, it's in storage right now. And there's a reason for that, because I don't have the time to put in the work to sell it. So what I decided years ago is when I do retire, I will probably retire to a smallish area, because I'm from a small town, and when my parents pass, you know, the house I grew up in will be, you know, split between the kids, et cetera, et cetera.
And I will interject, because where you live used to be a small town, but now it's been enveloped by suburbia.
Right. I mean, where I grew up. I live in Chaska. When I moved here, it was like, 15,000 people. And now it's basically become part of the other areas. You really don't know the difference between Chaska and Chanhassen at this point.
Mm-hmm. And it used to be very distinct. I used to go to the Chanhassen Playhouse, which was a dinner theater out there. And it might have been in Timbuktu, because it was, you know, you're out on two-lane highways in the middle of nowhere, it's dark. Now it's pretty much freeway. I mean, I can get to your place within a half hour if the snow isn't blowing and the traffic is with me. It used to be like a two-hour drive just to get there.
But where I grew up, that's never going to change. So I'm going to move to kind of a small town area and set up a used bookstore. You know, in a place that's got, you know, antique stores and stuff like that, which is pretty much any small town now. And I will just sell my comics and use books and do it online, and basically so that I have something to do. Because one of the things I've learned is when people, quote, retire, unquote, if they don't have anything to do, they don't have a place to go, they tend not to live very long. But the people who still have something to do, you know, Stan Lee went to work until the last few months he was alive. Whereas other people his age who retired and I'm just going to kind of sit around, they don't live long. So I'm going to do that. Otherwise, my son gets it. But, you know, when media goes bad, you know, I still have some videotapes around, but I'm probably going to eventually get rid of those because you can't buy a VCR anymore. They don't even make them anymore.
I count myself lucky because when Gruber got rid of his, I do have one or two that actually work.
I have one that got to the point where it needed service. Good luck finding that.
Well, the question being is, I know Nick, our good buddy Nick Post, called you once a media junkie.
Yeah.
Because you've got, I don't go crazy, but I kind of envy when I get to your place, because you've got every game console, you've got streaming services, DVDs, internets. I've seen the comic room both before and after your son helped you fix it up. I've seen the load-bearing omnibus piles. I've even seen your goody two-shoes. And it's just amazing. Whereas I see people online too. I like Terry Beatty always talks about the finds he got when he was garage sailing. One of my old customers, Bob Worth, collects horror statues and stuff, and every so often he'll do an open house in his studio. And of course, every time I'm working, or recently, you know, I just had the hip down, and I'm always curious, you know, you have an end game, but is there a time when you're like, okay, I don't really need a Nintendo Classic, although I want one?
There are times, but it's also, you know what, it still works. What happened when my son was young? He asked to borrow my Nintendo. you know, the original NES and the games, because he was moving in with his mom. And I already had a PlayStation, so it's like, okay, yeah, we'll do that. And then when he moved back, I was like, yeah, and you could you bring those games back? Because I'd really like to play them again. And I like, you know, right now there's a whole 8-bit nostalgia thing going and a 16-bit nostalgia thing going. But he said, well, I sold them all. And it was like, God damn it. Because, you know, maybe I don't want to play Dynasty Warriors 1, but I do like firing up playing Super Mario's 1, 2, and 3.
Now, of course, you know, I find it ironic. For an hour or two,
that's fun.
I find it ironic because you're always pressed for time. So is there a question, will you eventually just say, you know what, I'm not going to buy it because I don't have time for it?
I already
do you that. Still enjoy it just because, you know, I don't have the collector mentality anymore. I used to. And then when I get into my blurbing about it, you know, I found I enjoy selling the stuff. You know, so for me, it's kind of ironic, and people have pointed this out to me because I'm always talking about, and I'll get into it when we get into freaking and geeking. Oh, I bought this. I got this. I got this. Yeah, but you purged 25 boxes last year. Why are you buying more if you're trying to get rid of it? So, well, because I like it. Or I'm going to flip it. Because I figured out, and this is my primary problem, why I have problems decluttering, although I do like organizing. I don't look at things like, if I have a box of stuff, I get my calendar example. And I think I've used this on our podcast before. 5 calendars. Okay. I don't know what they're worth. So I there's a Marvel calendar from 1976, a Godzilla Matthew Broderick calendar, a Doctor Who calendar, a Trains calendar, and then just a Norman Rockwell calendar. So I don't know what they're worth. I can't find them online. Put them on the eBays. One doesn't sell. One sells for $1. The Godzilla one I gave to my buddy Gruber. The Doctor Who one sells for $20. The Marvel one sold for about $100. Maybe said, I don't know, 70, 100. It's a while ago. No idea what it's worth. That's what kind of paralyzes me from just throw it out. Because I'm like, you know what? I could sell it on eBay. I like selling on eBay. That's my, you know, there's a whole section of the show of me selling on eBay. And part of the fun is not only talking about what I've sold, but also some of the things I've learned or discovered on the way, because I found things, I didn't know what to do with it. I looked it up and I sold it. And that what I enjoy. And when I retire, I mean, I'm doing it now, but when I retire, that's probably what I will be doing. And, you know, if we're still podcasting, we'll talk about it. But if not, I'll be selling my stuff on the eBays. And yeah, I go back and I look at like, oh man, I probably should have kept that Avenging Spider-Man 10 because it's a $300 comic book. Now I only sold mine for $200. And the Edge of Spider-Verse, number two, I should have kept that. But, you know, I just enjoy, you know, finding things, discovering things, and you know, eventually selling them. So that's my joy or my problem.
Well, and another thing about it is every time I go, well, you know what? I really don't need these DVDs. It's all available online. Then all of a sudden it's like, wait, all the movies online are disappearing. Netflix used to have tons and tons and tons of movies. Now it's no, they're mostly TV series. Or, I don't need the Criterion stuff because they have a streaming service. Time Warner killed their streaming service. So there's a reason why I keep some of this stuff. I only buy DVDs of things that either A, I'm not going to find anywhere else. No one is going to put Uncle Was a Vampire on their streaming service. Because it's terrible. And I buy it for the fact that it's terrible. It's a terrible Christopher Lee Italian sex comedy with Italy's Jerry Lewis. Except it's pretty clear watching it that Christopher Lee was not told it was a comedy, and the scenes he's in were not filmed as a comedy. They just cut his stuff into a really bad comedy. You're not going to find that online, Joe.
You know, and I've had these discussions with my old partner, Pat, because he's doing the same thing, because he's part of his big thing is he's got tons of original art, and he displays his, which is a big thing about having a collection, is if you can display it. Yeah. Not necessarily a reading thing. And he does cycle his stuff out, but then eventually he gets to the point like, you know, I bought this $2,000 Alex Ross lithograph of all the Justice League, and it's beautiful, but I just don't like it anymore. And he's like, I don't know if I'll get $2,000 for it. And then he sells pieces of art that it just doesn't do it. And he does the same thing with his comic books. I mean, he goes through and he'll decide, you know what, I'm never going to read this again. I don't care about it. Get rid of it. Because, you know, his final sale is going to be at probably Fall Con coming up. Not the Spring Con, which, you know, is in May coming up. But, and I told him the same thing. I said, I might have a couple boxes. I'll come and hang with you and do the same thing. Because as I go through, you find things like, you know, it's kind of cool to have a run of Sandman signed by Neil Gaiman, but I have them in hardcovers. So when I want to read them, I can read them. I haven't jumped on like the absolute versions. How many versions do you need? And I kept the ones that I thought were really cool or that he autographed to me personally. So, you know, everything else I ended up selling, you know, and that was back in the days when you could actually walk up to, see Neil at a store signing and not have to, you know, get mobbed with 5,000 people.
Yeah.
Do you have anything like that where you just look at it and you're like, I don't need it anymore? Or are you just, like you said, I'll put it away and sell it when I retire?
I got rid of all my original art except for the two pages from Snakes on a Plane by Gordon Purcell and the Spider-Gwen piece. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to buy Spider-Gwen pieces. So rather than, you know, commissioning stuff and, oh, that looks cool, I'll get it. I'm just, okay. Over the weekend, I saw an artist put up a Spider-Gwen piece. She'd done a sketch cover. And it was, ooh, yeah, that's awesome. I want that. But the price was $250. And it's like, yeah, $250 for a sketch cover on a comic when I can get an Angel Medina piece for $100 and a Richard Case piece for this. And it, no, I'll wait. But whenever an artist, Will Mineo, who you may know from DN Agents, but he also worked in animation, did tons of animation work, G.I. Joe, Spider-Man, on and on and on. He's retired from animation, and he's just drawing stuff. And one of the things he's doing is he's taking his the art he draws and putting it out as Amazon books. And he had this gorgeous Spider-Gwen piece. And I asked how much it was, and he said, oh, sorry, I sold it on eBay 2 years ago because it was in one of his books. And I said, next time you do one, let me know. He's not taking commissions. He draws what he likes. And I think, you know, that's how I'm going to be for original art. When I'm able to move out of this crappy little place I'm in, you know, the Strode compound, I want to have a bookshelf with all of my... Because I've already got a bookshelf with all of the DC archives. I want to have one with all the Marvel essentials and all the Marvel omnibuses that I have. Because they just look so impressive and I enjoy reading them and I love that format. But the regular monthly comics, I'm, you know, if I don't sell them, my son will. And it's almost too much of a hassle to sell them. Other stuff? I give away a lot of stuff, Joe. I just don't talk about it. I donate it and put it up for sale at auctions. And I'm not going to say, oh, it doesn't bring me joy anymore. But it's like, okay, if I know that I have a digital version of this, I don't need the original. Nah, that's okay. It's gone. Because, again, too much stuff. But my whole thing with the, if something doesn't bring you joy, thank you for its service and give it away. My toilet brush brings me no joy. None at all. But I'm not going to throw it away because that toilet needs cleaned.
See, and I found this interesting because I talked to somebody whose mother was Japanese and father was American. And the mother has that same idea where you tank things, and it drove her father nuts. So it's very much a cultural thing where we will mock it. But for anybody who does have Japanese members in their family, they're going to look at us like, you Gaijins just don't get it, do you?
My son and I, when he was 16, we went through the house and we got rid of all of our unitaskers in the kitchen. Those are things that only do one thing, because any unitasker you have can be replaced by a multitasker. The problem was he loved doing it until he had to deal with the consequences, because I had picked up this little individual hot dog steamer at a backyard sale back when he was born. When I was married, my wife and I would go to backyard sales, and I remembered the little hot dog steamer from when I was a kid. It's, you put in water, and you put the hot dog on the thing, and then you put the bun on top, and it steams the bun and cooks the hot dog. And he was like, this is a unitasker. We're getting rid of it. We take all this stuff to Goodwill. 2 months later, he's like, where's that hot dog steamer? I was a unitasker, and you donated it. Damn it!
Yeah.
And I have to admit, I do get very attached to things. I have a microwave that my grandmother gave me when I got my first apartment. I still have that microwave. Now, it doesn't work the best. You can't read any of the times on it. And I know I need to get a new one. But it's still hard to go, Now, eventually, I'm going to get a microwave. You've heard about the Alexa microwaves, right, Joe?
I haven't.
You can get a microwave with Amazon's Alexa in it.
That's what I need, is some perverted Wi-Fi guy spying on me with my microwave. Yeah, I'm telling you, we're one virus away from society collapsing. Then you're going to want to come to me, because I'll have a working DVR or VHS with tapes.
I have a DVD player.
Doesn't matter. They're all wired. Wired, wired, wired.
No, not all of them.
Then again, as I'm watching different things on TV, they had a guy with like the new pressure cookers are like safety locked, so you don't have to worry about them blowing up.
Damn right.
I almost am to the point where my wife and I are thinking of getting it just for the idea. It's like in the morning you toss in whatever you want to cook, and then you come home at night and it's ready to go.
Joe, it's called an Instant Pot, and it's amazing.
Yeah, there are different ones.
The Instant Pot is amazing because it's not just a pressure cooker. It's also a slow cooker and a griller, and it's... I am not a member of the Instant Pot cult, but I'm close. Yeah, I imagine if I had somebody else living with me and was cooking for more than just one person, I would be in the Instant Pot cult, because you can do anything in the damn thing. One of my friends online is like, I made yogurt this weekend. Made yogurt. Yeah, my Instant Pot. It has setting for it. You push the button, you come home, you have yogurt.
They were talking on a show I was watching about making cheesecake.
Yeah.
And I was like, really?
Yeah.
So, and I got a question if I would use it enough to make it worth the effort. You know, because I've complained about this in the past. I get hungry. 2 pieces of bread. If I toast it, I'll put American cheese on it. If not, butter, peanut butter, fold it. I'm good. I don't cook. I don't plan meals to eat. I just wait till I'm hungry and then I eat. And on the plus side, I don't go out to fast food anymore. So that helps a bit. The final question in the whole decluttering thing I have for you is, can you find what you need when you want it?
If it's not a regular monthly comic, yes.
Yeah.
But that's because I have a weird, I have a weird brain.
Well, you know, I can appreciate that because, first of all, we're podcasting together. 8 years? Wow. And second, I work that way too, because my favorite story is when I come home from one of my deployments and Dana was saying, well, I got this class and we're studying graphic novels, and she showed me the list and I'm like, well, I got five of these. Well, we looked for them downstairs. Don't worry, I'll find them. And so as I'm downstairs going through my things, I remember, okay, I moved this pile right before I left. Yep. It was not in that pile. And it should be in this pile. And boom, I come upstairs and they're like, where did you find it? I said, you guys think I'm nuts, but I can tell when somebody's moved my stuff and messed around my things because suddenly I can't find them. Case in point, all my I'm right on top of a box day.
Yeah.
Last box day, and most of it was because of my hip recovery, I didn't read hardly anything out of my box day. So I'm like, not only I got like 2 months worth of comics to catch up on, and I'm getting a third box probably next week, and I don't know where my other 2 months of comics went because I had them piled up where I could get to them. And then when it finally got to the point where, you know, I can move, somebody, not saying who, because she's in the other room listening, and I'm like, I don't know where they went. I find my comics from November that I read before I had my hip surgery. The system works if it's allowed to.
When I would have anxiety attacks, one of the things that would happen, and I did not know these were anxiety attacks, but I would say, I want to read this book. And I would go to where I thought it was and I couldn't find it. And then I would just look and 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 look. And the reason I knew something was wrong was I would find it and that wouldn't relieve the stress. So when I was in therapy a couple of years ago, I mentioned, you know, that I hadn't done that for a long time and I was starting to do it again. And the therapist said, oh, yeah, that's a panic attack. You know, that feeling you have where it's, oh, my God, I need to find this. And I would say, well, I needed to find it because I needed something to read at work. And if I wouldn't have that thing to read at work, I would just be thinking about it the whole time. And the therapist said, yeah, that's the anxiety. That's the panic attack. And your brain, rather than going, oh, I'm having a panic attack, is going, well, it must be because this isn't right. Or it must be because that isn't right. Or it must be because something has changed. You'll have the feeling because there's something, you know, the silicon chip inside your brain gets switched to overload. And your brain will then attach it to something thinking, all right, if I do this, it'll solve the problem. Now, for other people, and I've had this too, when the anxiety attack hits, you'll say, oh, someone I care about's in trouble. I screwed up at work and I'm going to get fired. And you obsess on that. Now that I've, you know, gone through the therapy, I'm on medication, I do all my things I'm supposed to do to take care of myself, I don't have that. And it's like, ah, that isn't where it's supposed to be. I'll find it later. Which is good because then I'm not spending 3 hours looking for something and then going, I found it. And now I don't care. But, well, what? You know, we talked about how I give away things. I bought a Kindle years ago. And then last year, the latest version, Amazon really, really wanted you to buy it. So it's like, normally this is $150. But if you're an Amazon Prime member, you could get it for $49.99. And I looked at it, oh, it's backlit, and it's got this, and it's got this, and it's got more storage. Okay, I'll get the new one. I gave away my old one to a friend of mine who reads a lot but can't afford a Kindle. So I find other homes for things that I have duplicates of. And I do it very quietly. I don't, you know, talk about it on the website or the podcast or on Facebook or anything. I'll just message a couple people and go, hey, do you want this? And if not, you know, there's the Goodwill. There's I work, the group on my work at has a series of thrift stores. And I will take things there because the money they use from the thrift store they use for the clients and the facility themselves. So that's kind of how they were able to stay afloat in Illinois when Illinois hadn't paid them in 3 years.
Well, you know, you could also give them to the charity booth at the MSP SpringCon 2019, which will be Saturday, May 18th and Sunday, May 19th at the Minnesota State Fair Grandstand. Free parking, free picnic areas, just a ton of fun. Our good buddy from last week's podcast, Angel Medina, is already up as a featured guest creator. And, of course, we'll be doing the annual charity garage sale, my family and I. I know this year we're doing all the proceeds will go to either the Heroes Initiative or the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. And, you know, I'm gathering up stuff now. So if you got something you're interested, give me a quick email, a quick blurb through our Facebook page, and just let me know you got something. We'll figure out a way to get it here. If you're in the Twin Cities area, I can always come and get it. Because as Corey knows, when he used to hang with me at this thing, there's nothing we can't sell for charity.
I sold over 100 ShamWows.
He did. It was amazing. And I kicked myself for not buying one. Even when I was at the fair, the guy's always doing a deal on a fair. And I was like, geez, maybe I should get some ShamWows. No.
You know, they're from Germany. And you know the Germans make good stuff.
Yes. That's why we still have Volkswagens running around.
Not for long. Yeah. Now, Joe, you said something about how they might have food trucks there.
Oh, by the way, if you're a creator, you can go to their website, mcbacomiccons.com. They have their dealer application up. So it's real easy. You send it in, and then they'll go through and try to get as many into that that grandstand area as possible.
I don't know if you've got any clout left, but I do know that there is a food truck here in the Twin Cities that would probably not just be pretty good for having their food there, but also would be able to sell a lot of autographs.
Oh.
Do you know the wrestler ODB?
No.
She was in TNA forever and ever and ever. She's a local wrestler. She's kind of semi-retired from wrestling, now has a food truck here in the Twin Cities called the Meet and Greet Truck.
Well, so, you know, eating a truck is kind of boring because it doesn't really do much unless it's Optimus Prime.
So if you want to grab her meat,
whoa,
that's what her t-shirt says. They should invite her because she's looking for places to set up over the summer.
Well, that is kind of cool. Better. However, that's all controlled by the state fair. We have no say in it.
Ah, well.
It's a good idea, though. Especially if you're having an event out there. Get a hold of Corey. He'll get you in touch.
I've gone to her food truck, and while I don't eat meat, the coleslaw, potato salad, and other things are really good.
Whoa. And you said just grab her meat, not eat her meat.
I remember ODB when she was down at First Avenue with Sean Daivari as a tag team. That was, what, in 2000? Oh, my God, I'm old. Well, you know who else has stuff to sell you?
No, this isn't where I do the eBay part, is it?
No, it's where we talk about these guys, our sponsors. That's right, here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, we have ads, and our first sponsor is me. That's right, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. I have my first book out with Dangerous Dan Moore. It's the first 100 strips of our online web strip, Worldwide News, the story of the lowest-rated cable news network. And you can get yourself a copy with commentary, with all sorts of extras, with signatures and everything. Just email Dan over at lordshadowflame@gmail.com. Our top sponsor, who's been with us since day one, is DreamHost. DreamHost.com. You need yourself a website, and DreamHost.com is the number one web host in the whole known universe. Just head over to DreamHost.com, put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, get $20 off your first year. How can you beat that? Our other sponsor is Graze, G-R-A-Z-E.com. Healthy snacks for a healthy lifestyle. Just head over to Graze, put in the code C-O-R-Y-S, 3R5P. Your first and fifth box are free. You can get them weekly. You can get them bi-weekly. You can get them monthly. You just order a whole bunch of them. It's great stuff to keep you away from the vending machine at work. Now, if you would like to leave a comment for any of the podcasts that we do, we'd love those. Go ahead and email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, or you can call 952-856-0519. Operators are standing by. Okay, it's just a place that we'll record your calls, but we'll play them on the air. We'll answer your questions. We love getting feedback. Tell us what you think. Ask a question. Suggest a topic. Be a guest. Send us your stuff. SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. If you would like to advertise on any of the Solitaire Rose radio shows, you can. Just email us at SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. Subject: advertising. Thanks.
Cool.
And before we get to you talking about the eBay stuff, I talk about all the other stuff I do, especially now that Fantastic Forecast second episode is up.
Ooh, how far did you get this time?
We do four issues a week.
Did you break off in any annuals, or are you still in the classic Lee Kirby run?
Let's see. We got up to issue 8 in episode 2. We've already recorded episode 3, where we get up to issue 12. And I announced on that I've started kind of another podcast, but not really. Solitaire Rose Radio is going to be doing DVD-style commentary on the Strange Tales Human Torch stories, which are running concurrently with those issues of the Fantastic Four.
Whoa, funny you bring that up. That's for shattering, folks.
So there's that. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network has all sorts of podcasts. We've got Scrabbling Across the West with Dave Cafell and his lovely bride, Stephanie. They travel across the country playing musical gigs, and at night they sit down to play Scrabble and talk about their day at scrabbling.solitairerose.com. There's Novelcast over at novels.solitairerose.com, where I take the novels that I've written and turn them into audio podcasts. Currently, we are doing a novel called Do the Job, which is a murder mystery set in the world of 1980s professional wrestling. Then over at badadvice.solitairerose.com, me, Corey Strode, and Wolfie B. Bad, along with Dan Moore, give bad advice to people who send in questions. That's bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is growing. Be there! You think NBC will get mad I used that? And now we get to Joe's favorite part of the show. No, not where I list off the medications of mine that he could steal.
I'd love some oxycodone. I'm out.
I don't have any oxycodone, but I do have some Oxypro.
Ooh.
No. It's Joe, what's going on the eBays?
Yoga hosers.
Oh, the Kevin Smith movie about his kid and one of her friends.
Yep. And I had from Dynamite Comics a copy of the comic that was given away, I guess, at Sundance. And when it first came out, it was like amazingly crazy in price. But it has since dropped because as more and more came out. And I think he ended up selling a bunch through Dynamite, the ones that were left over. But I had a copy on the eBays and I sold it. Actually, I've been actually doing pretty good. I don't know if it's because we're back in business. The government's open. I'm going to get paid. Well, sort of, maybe. We'll find out. But a lot of different things have sold. And it's always fun to see what's sold. I'm just going to kind of rattle a few off. And maybe I'll throw in a few Strodes in there. Because I mentioned Astro Strode. You know, I mentioned yoga hosers. I sold a Walt Disney Uncle Scrooge number 310. Corey, do you remember why that was so expensive?
Wasn't that the one that was only in the Whitman 3-packs?
No. This is when they went from the 60-cent format to the $7.95 format in 1998.
Oh, so it was that whole run. Yeah. When Gladstone really screwed up their sales.
Yeah, and now they're very valuable because, you know, nobody bought them.
Yeah.
It's amazing when you don't buy something how the price can go up years later. I had, from our Black Friday sale, I bought a book from our buddies down at Issues Needed, The Art of Lady Death, Volume 1, which was out of Boundless. It was the signed hardcover, signed by Brian Polito. I looked through it. Yeah, it brought me joy. I can't deny that. But it's not something I kept. So I blew it out on the eBays. A lot of Simpson comics went. I tell you, if you can find these things cheap, they're probably something you might want to sit on because they've stopped making them. I did see something online talking about whether or not Simpsons TV show will continue because now Fox TV, if you remember, everything was sold to Disney except the news and the sports. That means the broadcasting network will have to foot the cost to keep making Simpson TV shows. And they're questioning, will they do that? Will Disney care to keep it on the air? Or will they just go and maybe do movies since the movie they did was a tremendous hit? But in the meantime, you know, it's a hit or miss whether they've gone up or not. But if you can find them in mint shape, I definitely would say keep them in good shape and see what they do. I sold just a ton load of them, including some of the Treehouse of Horrors. Those are usually more expensive selling because they're higher price. You know, people wouldn't necessarily buy them. I absolutely loved them because they usually you have just tremendous name artists coming in doing some really fun stuff. But it didn't bring me joy, so I sold it. I also sold a run of Treasure Chest. Corey, do you remember what Treasure Chest is? I mean, outside of the Monopoly game?
Isn't that the Catholic comic that came out? Now, I don't know because I was a Catholic. Was it weekly or monthly?
Looking at it, I sold a run from 1950 to 1951. And if I look at it, it looks like it did come out weekly. Because it's you look on it, it says, you know, volume 6, number 16, April 12th, 1951, number 17, April 26. I don't know if they were sold or if they were given away. They were out of business by the time I was in Catholic school. And for some reason, I had picked up a run. And I had everything but issue number 8. And usually you find the treasure chests in good shape because they're, you know, they were beat up, loved, thrown out. Nobody really kept them. So if you can find them in mint shape, you got some serious money here. This whole run only went for about $40. So it wasn't that amazing. How about Darker Image, Corey? What do you know about Darker Image?
Darker Image was a one-shot that was supposed to be a series that was going to be kind of Image's version of Marvel Comics Presents. It had the Max, a Rob Liefeld character I don't remember, and Deathblow?
Probably. I don't remember. I had a set of them picked up at a con I did a while back, which I'll talk a little bit more when we get to geeking. But I found a platinum copy, which was like, I don't know if it was given one per retailer or whatever. And then I had a gold copy that I found. The gold copy.
Gold
they gave away. And I think I've told this story where we had to impress the Image boys who were handing them out as if they were keys to the kingdom. And you had to dance. You were all dancing and you had to dance. And I think out of the four people who danced with this poor woman, who I wish I could remember her name, only three of us got Darker Image golds. And I hope she got one for putting up with us and dancing the whole time. So, but this was all way back in 1993. Let's see. Other fun stuff I sold. Avengers X Sanction. I don't know what year that was from. That was a 4-issue miniseries where the Avengers decided to take down Cable. I think at the end of it, he ends up depowered. That was right before Avengers versus X-Men or X-Men versus Avengers, depending on who you were on. I sold a hardcover set of Secret Society of Supervillains, Volume 1 and 2.
Ooh.
Volume 2, ultra rare, hard to find. This is one of those books, you know, speaking of giving joy, I had never read this series. And so I picked up these and I am betting I probably picked them up at either a Comic-Con or maybe it was way back on Black Friday. No, I had to have been before that because I think I got them from Comic College because they had their sticker on the back and I had to peel it off. And what disappointed me most about this series was the fact that it fell prey to the DC comic implosion. The stories not great. The art is passable for 70s comics, but it was just a lot of fun because you never knew what hero would pop up. You never knew how the villains would pop up. They'd fight amongst themselves. They'd do this, they'd do that. It was just an ongoing, old-fashioned continuity comic, and then it just ended because of the implosion, right on a cliffhanger. As far as I know, it wasn't resolved, although the characters did show up later in the Justice League. And they did show in book two, and this might be why it's so expensive, the parts that were later showed on the, was it canceled comic Cavalcade?
Yes. Yeah.
So they did reprint some of that where they were going with it. But I was just, I mean, after reading all these stories and just enjoying the ride, it just was over. And I was like, you know what? This didn't bring me any joy. So I got rid of it. And I've got the original comics, which I will eventually get up on the eBay. So if you're looking for a set of comics, you know, you can talk to me and we'll figure that out. And then, of course, I sold another comic, which brings me joy, but I do have a graphic novel of it. Corey, what's significant about Superman 423?
That was Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow.
Yep. Alan Moore, Kurt Swan, and what we talked about last podcast, George Perez. Sorry. Thank you, Gruber. And, you know, I got more stuff coming. Yeah, the government's open, but in 3 weeks, they might be on my freaking list that we're shut down again. And this time, I'll have to go to work and not get paid. So check out my stuff, KRAYZ. I've put up a ton of stuff last week. I got tons more coming up. Like I said, I enjoy selling stuff on the eBays, and I enjoy talking about comics that we discover and things that I discover in my collection and things I find that I can flip. So check it out.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Avengers The Crossing.
I haven't opened it yet. So as long as it's sealed on my omnibus bookcase, it brings me joy.
I was going to say, I don't think that story brought anybody any joy. Why does it exist?
I actually am enjoying this joke. It's more fun than Oprah eating canned hams.
I told you.
I just don't want Maria pissed at me.
See, that's my problem. Everything I own brings me joy.
I've got that joy
down in my heart.
I caught a fart in my heart. Whoops.
See, I've got my little Coca-Cola bear that I got one time when I bought a Coke out of a vending machine, and in the bottle was the little Coca-Cola bear rather than soda. At the time, I was mad because I really wanted a soda, but now I've got the little Coca-Cola bear with this bottle of Coke. How could I ever get rid of you, Coca-Cola bear?
You can ruin the Flash with one letter. Make him the Flush.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where I tell Joe that about 100 episodes of the podcast brought me no joy. It's Freaking and Geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
You know, we haven't really talked about, what's his name, Bill Maher? And
Bill
his,
Maher.
Maher, continuing his rant against comic fandom. And part of it is, I think, because Corey and I know this from being pro wrestlers fans all this year. You know, if how did Jesse Ventura say it? For those who believe, no explanations necessary. For those who don't, no explanation is possible.
Well, it was actually Jeff Jarrett who said, if you like it, no explanation's necessary. If you don't like it, no explanation will be good enough. For Bill Maher, I'm a fan of his show. I like his stand-up. And I got home Saturday morning from the group home, and there was the new episode. And I'd already seen online that everybody had posted how much they hate him and how he's a hack and he's not famous anymore. Guys, he's got the number one show on HBO, so just shut it.
Chill.
So I watched, and then it got to, there's a picture of Stan Lee, and he said, people have been asking me why I said what I said about Stan Lee. I turned it off, deleted it, moved on with my life.
You know, and I also come to the conclusion that Bill is very intelligent when it comes to politics. He's very ignorant when it comes to comics. He just has a stereotype, and I'm a little disappointed he likes to revel in it. But it gets him attention, and if you boys keep giving him attention, he'll just triple down on his double down. So,
oh yeah,
is that quadruple down? That's why I don't play poker anymore. Really, that's about it. Freaking wise. How about you, Mr. Strode? What are you freaking on?
I have a few things.
Other than you can't go outside in this weather without a tauntaun and a lightsaber.
I can go outside. It's cold enough now that I have to button my coat. Last night was the Royal Rumble, which I have not watched yet. Joe, ask me why I have not watched the Royal Rumble yet.
I will, but I got to preface it that my daughter, Holly, who was watching with her boyfriend, said it was phenomenal.
That's what I hear, too.
Corey, why didn't you watch the Royal Rumble?
Because it's 7 goddamn hours long.
Whoa, it doesn't sound like that brings you joy.
7 hours. A 2-hour pre-show, and the Rumble itself was 5 hours. 7 hours. On my way into work today, I was listening to Busted Open Radio, which is a wrestling talk show on Sirius XM. Bully Ray was like, 7 hours is too effing long. Pay-per-view. And I agree. Last night, I got done with mixing the podcast and everything by about 7. It's like, oh, okay, I'll watch it. I'll get caught up. And it's like, the pay-per-view's already been going on for 4 hours. And I looked on the WWE the network, and it's like, oh, it's scheduled till 11. That means I won't be done watching this until the 3 in the morning. Nope, I'll watch it later. No wrestling show should be that long. None. I remember WrestleMania, I would start to get exhausted by 4.5 hours. WrestleMania this year, I imagine, is going to be like 12 hours long. I remember going to Ring of Honor shows. I love Ring of Honor. And this is the pre-Sinclair Ring of Honor, when they used to come here like 2004, 5, 6, and 7. I went to one show. They did 3 hours. And then, they're ending up, and it's just intermission. And I was tired. Came back. They did an hour and a half, and then they had an hour-long draw between Daniel Bryan and Samoa Joe. Ugh, 5.5 hours. By the middle of the Daniel Bryan, Samoa Joe, it was like, I'm just running a marathon here. I just want to make it to the finish line before I die. I took a friend once to a Ring of Honor show, and oh my God, it was 5 hours long. And I'm sorry, after 3 hours at a live show, you're kind of wore out if it's good. For a wrestling pay-per-view, 7 hours is just too long. The other thing I am freaking out about, I'm reading up, I'm going through my the Marvel Unlimited. And one of the things I'm noticing in the current Marvel universe is they jump to alternate universes way too easily. I remember when going to an alternate universe was a big deal. It didn't happen all the time. It was a big deal. Reed Richards had to impress about how dangerous it was, et cetera, et cetera. Now they just hop to an alternate universe, Oh, I'm going to go see my friend.
I heard that Starbucks is still open. Let's go.
It's like one of my problems I have with the Marvel Universe now, where it's interstellar travel. Everybody on Earth. Doctor Strange. Oh, I ran out of magic. Guess I'm going to travel around the universe. Oh, I got stranded somewhere. Oh, hitchhike home. When that sort of thing is that easy, it loses a lot of the awe and wonder. It makes it too casual. It makes it so, it's no big deal. We'll just, pop over here. We'll just go to the Kree homeworld. It's not that big a deal. It should be a big deal. Here on Earth, we barely make it into orbit. The U.S. we have nothing that can get our people to the space station. In the Marvel Universe, it's like, I guess we'll head over to the Skrull homeworld. It's a little off-putting. But that's all I'm geeking on. Joe! I'm sorry, that's all I'm freaking on. Joe, what are you geeking on?
Oh, I got all sorts of things. I'm back to work. I actually get paid for my work.
It's about time, you slacker.
I know. I'm only at part-time, which is very seductive because, you know, I get in and I do what I got to do, and then I get to leave and I don't have to worry about shutting down. I get home when it's daylight. I can actually do things. Like, I'll get to watch the Super Bowl. Could have watched Royal Rumble last night. I actually thought about it, but what I like to do is, you know, hear about it and decide what to watch. And now just talking and reading online, everybody's like, oh, watch the whole thing. So I'll probably do that tomorrow when it's like, you know, sub-zero. And I'm actually moving pretty good. The first day back was just, oh my God. It's like I park 500 miles from my where my car is to where I have to work. And even with my handicap permit, that means I'm like 499 miles from where I park to where I work. And although the second day of the walk was a little bit better, so that is encouraging. I do find myself, I don't feel like I have a bowling ball in my hip. Not a lot of pain unless I move like somewhere I wasn't supposed to. So things are getting better, back on track. The doc did say, you know, it'll take about 6 months before a lot of that numbness and weirdness goes away. And I know that from when I was a kid having lung surgery. I mean, it took me like half a year before I could, you know, get my armpit farting back on track. So I got that going for me, which is fine. Still digging the Orville from Fox. Last couple episodes had really poignant stuff in them, which you know, you don't see on the Star Trek. What's kind of neat about it is that it's almost like just a normal everyday what they used to call MASH, the cross
MASH
between
was a service comedy.
No, what was it? It was a dramedy. Like, it was
dramedy, part, okay.
Part drama, part comedy. I think they're going for that. I haven't seen last season because a lot of people said they kind of went for more gross-out jokes. But the few things they've done this year in the seasons, the episodes I've seen, there's a few that you're just kind of like, oh, that's kind of poignant. Like, 2 weeks ago, episode had a deal where, you know, Captain Archer was duped by somebody who he had fallen in love with, and despite, you know, saying we had to have had something there, and this person kept saying no we didn't, we blew it, and at the end, and I'm pretty sure people on the ship know what's happened, because, you know, he was kidnapped, they found him, they rescued him, there was a detente between the enemies so they could switch. He comes, he walks onto the bridge, and he just sits down, and he's just, it's bugging him. I mean, we've all been there. How you got to go back to work, even though the person you know just crushed your heart. And what was interesting is that, you know, his second in command is his ex-wife. And I haven't watched the episodes in the first season where they deal with those two. But, you know, she looks at him and she has to know how he's feeling. But she can't really say anything because it's really not your place. If the captain wants to say something, he will. But they just kind of left on a, you know, watching Captain just staring out the window. And for some reason that struck me. This week's episode, which I just watched, you know, I always watch it. It's always limited commercial interruptions, but I just flip through the commercials anyways. And I've been digging the show. I mean, it's not groundbreaking. It's not, it's just enjoyable, at least for me. And they're doing things that, you know, sometimes you think, geez, I wonder why Star Trek couldn't have done that. But then again, I think that too when I watch Babylon 5. You know, Star Trek should have done that. Or, you know, maybe the problem is that Star Trek is such the gold standard for science fiction on television, we forget there's other ways to do it. So, anyways, I've enjoyed it, so you should be able to check it out. I think it's on, is it on Hulu? I don't know. It's on one of those things. On other things that I watched something I recorded a while back called Betty Page, First Lady of Television. A show spanning her entire career, and just amazing watching the footage of her years ago when she was young, singing and doing her show and doing it live. The ethics she had, like, there was always a thing about one of the band members was black and the
whoa! You said down. Betty Page.
Betty Page?
Yeah, I don't think you mean Betty Page.
No. Betty White.
Thank you. I was going to say, Betty Page didn't have a band.
She had a band.
in Stripper Rob,
you gotta open up that black page issue, the black bag issue of number one that just came out. That's where my notes got effed up, because I was gonna talk about the Betty Page number one, where it's a black bag that Dynamite did, and of course it's one of her famous topless shots, and they sell it in a black bag, and I sold mine, but I also remembered, I think I mentioned it before, and then of course the note next to it is Betty White, First Lady of Television, and about her whole television career. That's what I meant to get all excited about. And of course it was a pledge break, so you know, you fast forward over the pledge break things. And
now I want to see I want to see PBS do a Betty Page documentary.
I do. It would be interesting to come think of it. They'd probably do it right. But what was interesting about Betty White is how in her early show in the 50s, she had a black band member. And of course, down south affiliates were like, well, we would carry the show, but we don't want to upset our viewing audience. You have to dump the black person out of the band. And of course, Betty just said, no, he's not there. You don't need a Betty White. So just, you know, two things come to mind. What the heck is wrong with you, Southerners? And second, you know, I've heard things like that over and over about Elvis, about the Beatles when they were down there. They're like, if you're going to have a segregated auditorium or wherever they're playing, they said, we're not playing. And, you know, that was too much money to give up. So it's just, you know, we're shocked by the fact that there's racism around, but, you know, it's pretty deep seated. It was around. I mean, I was pretty naive growing up about it, you know, thinking, oh, it's old. It's civil rights. We're taking care of it. No, it's around. It's just, it's an attitude. It doesn't bring me joy. This show did though. So I watched it. It was kind of fun. And then online, and I will probably post this to our Facebook page. If you haven't found it, look for Bo Meme in Rhapsody. A guy not only made a bunch of memes to Bohemian Rhapsody, the awesome Queen song, but then he synchronized it to music on his YouTube channel. It is freaking hilarious. And I guess there's some type of revenue sharing on YouTube where every time you watch it, Queen and the estate of Freddie Mercury get a piece of the action. And I don't understand how it works, because we don't really do things like that. But I just thought that was kind of neat. And like I said, I'll link it to our Facebook page so you can go check it out, or just Google it. Go on Facebook. You're bound to find it, because it's getting tons of hits. I didn't blab about it too much last episode because we were talking with Angel about George Perez, and it went long. And, you know, you gotta know, folks, when as crazy it is that I don't wear pants when I podcast, Corey, you know, when this thing gets over 90 minutes, I can hear his veins throbbing, because he knows after 90 minutes, you guys tend to fade out. And, you know, he wants to keep it under 90 minutes. And I'll acquiesce to that, mainly because I'm not the one that has to edit this thing down. So, but I didn't talk much about it, but I not only did I hit a Comic-Con as we record this 2 weeks ago, but then I did hit some of the stores on one of my last days before I had to go back to work. And I found joy. I mean, I picked up a lot of stuff, and some of it I'll just share quick. If you happen to be going by our good buddy down at Cedar Cliff Collectibles, you really got to stop by, because he has Marvel graphic novels for anywhere from $1.99 to $6.99, and some even newer ones that aren't as cheap. But I picked up X-Men versus Hulk, which is basically World War Hulk, X-Men, Hulk team up, X-Men versus Hulk, you know, just a bunch of fights between the X-Men and the Hulk. $2.99. X-Men Battle of the Atom, which was I believe it was, let's see, all new X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, Wolverine, and a couple bookends, a big crossover event. And I'd never read it because it took me a while to get the comics lined up. It's somewhere in my to-be-read collection. Well, for $1.99, I bought the graphic novel. I'm going to read it. And I've been trying this book over and over. I know, Corey, you said you got the omnibus, I believe. But part of the War of Kings, I think, is Realm of Kings.
Yes.
And he had it for $2.99. So I have both those books. I'll try it again. I just blank on it. I don't know if I'm missing something between War of Kings and Realm of Kings. I don't know. You talked about the Strange Tale Human Torch stories. For $6.99, I got the softcover Marvel Masterworks that reprints all those. I think it's Strange Tales 101 to 117 and then Annual 2. I think I don't recall if I have these. I know there's the Essential Human Torch, which I have, which may have reprinted them.
Yes, but it reprints all of them.
But these are in the color.
Thing and Human Torch stories at the very end.
Yeah, this one's in there as well. And I'm like, you know what? This is in color for $6.99. The beautiful thing about these is I'll probably read them, and if I decide I don't want to keep them, I'll bring them to the auction. Not the art auction, but the charity booth at the MCBA con. Comic book wise, I just picked up just fun stuff. Corey, have you ever heard of the comic strip Tiger?
Yes.
Yep. This
I
was
can
a,
see it in my mind's yep. eye. I don't remember who did it, but I remember that art style.
Yeah, Bud Blake. It was about Tiger, which was a kid who always had a baseball hat, his little heavyset friend, and his dog. It was just a kid strip that was in the papers when I was growing up. It's not anymore, but it was also a Carlton comic. And if you hold on half a second, I'm going to fire up the old Cray 1000. I had to go back because of the furlough. But let's see, 1970 to 71 with 1 in 73, 6 issues. And I've got issue number 6. So in mint shape, 15, 20 bucks, depending on this. This one was just in the dollar box. So I picked it up. What the heck? You know, fun reading. I picked up Jimmy Olsen, number 96. Corey, I'll give you a buck if you can tell me what's significant on the cover of this. Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen, number 96.
I'm going to guess Giant Turtle Olsen.
That's not a bad guess. This is Atlas Olsen, which had him in the pro wrestling ring, which is good enough for me to buy it. In the I don't know if I have it, but I'm going to buy it anyway category, Superman Man of Steel number 30, which is the color form issue where you can pick your own fight with had Lobo and Superman. It was in a baggie, and you peeled it off, and then in the back had all the color form. That
chloroform's what you put on a rag to get a date in the 40s.
Which actually kind of ties into...
Oh, is that joke going to get me in trouble?
Oh, this one is a book called Call Me from Shudo Poco. It's just got a bunch of manga girls on it, including the infamous Upskirt. It says it's a one-shot mature readers. Hey, for a buck, you got my attention. What if Deathhead 1 had lived? As you know, he died, so Deathheads 2 could... Yeah, I'm getting bored with it anyways, but it was a buck. And then I did pick up a couple other things. I found an Action Comics number 437 that was $5. That's one of the 100 pagers. I got a Superman 227, which was one of the giant size, all kryptonite issues. I might have talked about this one earlier. I picked that up. And then, of course, you know, Corey, because they're making a comeback.
Pogs!
I got Hero Caps, the sealed, very rare, as seen on TV, X-Men Adventure Hero Caps, which I do remember selling, but I figured for a buck, why not? A couple other fun ones. I found a Darkness number 1 that was signed by Garth Ennis and Bat, who I guess is the... Sylvester might have just wrote it. Bat might have been actually drawing it, but I'd have to... Bust it open to find out. But anything Garth Ennis signed is fine. And then I found a copy of Sovereign 7, number 1. Corey, what was Sovereign 7?
That was a comic by Chris Claremont set in the DC Universe. However, it was creator-owned. He owned that book. And that's why there has not been a Sovereign 7 trade paperback.
Yeah, which is weird because I remember what's significant about this book, if I'm remembering right, is that one of the Cap City shows, he was there. And he not only did he take business cards, which nothing ever came of it, but he was giving away these copies of this book, one per account, And my guess is Goober must have had it because I don't ever remember seeing it. But he would not only sign it, but Dwayne Turner was there and he'd sign it as well. And this one's triple signed. I can't make out who the other signature thing is, but you know, you could tell because it's he had number ones all had chromium covers. This one has chrome where the UPC symbol would be. And I think this one was actually one that Nick Post, our old buddy, scored because I got it out of the variant box from Cedar Cliff because I guess he bought a bunch of stuff that I didn't ask him how he got it, but he got a bunch of stuff from Nick's collection. So it was kind of fun digging through all that. I did stop by Comic College and I picked up a copy of another omnibus. I got to, you know, it's cold and by God, I got to get warm. So this one is the Matt Fantastic Four Fraction Bagley Alred.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff. Yeah, Fantastic Four 1 to 16, FF 1 to 16 with some other fun stuff in there. He had it at half price. That's good enough for me. I mean, and then again, I have the comics in my collection. I'll probably get rid of them. The last thing I'm geeking on, and you know, you talked about it, Corey, getting all your essentials in one place and getting them all. And I've got mine up, and they look really cool. But I am trying to finish and fill in a few holes. And I've been I lucked out because at the source I found Fantastic Four number 9, which is one of the last ones published. This brings it up 184 to 188 and 190 to 207, which again was that was kind of back in my pre-buying or collecting era, the issue 200, which I do recall reading because my cousin Jerry, who got me going on comics, he had issue 200, which was the be-all and end-all fight between Mr. Fantastic and Dr. Doom.
What was the special thing about that cover, Joe?
I you know, I don't even remember. I've bought copies of it because you can find it cheap, but
that cover was the last thing Jack Kirby drew for Marvel.
Oh, wow. I got the black and white right here. I'm looking at, yeah. Our 200th issue, 17th anniversary spectacular, Mr. Fantastic in the long awaited fight to the finish against the power of Dr. Doom. And this was bad guy Doom. This wasn't pseudo good guy like he is now. So on the reason I'm going on about that, because if you go on the eBays and look up that particular issue, they're asking $70 for it. Because it's
really?
Yeah. I don't know if they're getting it, but that's the only copies available. A couple other ones I scored off the old eBays. The Essential Luke Cage Power Man Volume 1. I only have Volume 2 in my collection. Not to be confused with Power Man Iron Fist, which is its own run. I picked up the Essential Super Villain Team Up Number 1. And again, I picked this up because I don't have it. But I'm also like, do I need it? Because I might have a hardcover with all those in it anyways. I don't know. If I do, it'll turn around and be at the charity booth or back on eBay. And you hear me clicking around in the background because in 47 minutes, I am bidding. I've got my bid in for Essential Classic X-Men Volume 3, which I believe will fill in my run of, let's see, collects X-Men all the way up to 66 and then shows the covers from 67 to 80. Includes Amazing Adventures 11 through 17, which I think was Beast, Marvel Team Up 4, which is Spider-Man, X-Men, and the Incredible Hulk 150 and 161. So that will be my run until I find cheap copies of Omnibus of the classic X-Men. And then for the new X-Men, I've got my big Omnibus. So I kind of like these. They bring me joy because then it's like I have all the Defenders, all of Amazing Spider-Man, all of the early X-Men from before I started collecting. I imagine they're on Marvel Unlimited, but you know, if my internet's down, which knock on wood, it hasn't gone down this entire podcast, I have them and I can read them. So I do have a list here of ones I'm missing, with the exception of the Avengers ones. 8 and 9 are another one of those out of print that are like $80-$90. And what kills me is I could have bought them at the source, but when we went there for Black Friday, somebody beat me to them. Durr, curses you. Thwarted. So anyways, I'm trying to finish a run if you got any you're interested in selling, let me know, because I keep my eyes open. I'm looking on eBays, and they do look impressive once you get them all lined up. And the fact that I have them down there and I can read them at my leisure, that brings me joy. Corey, what brings you joy? You know, we can't use that. We'll be infringing on somebody's trademark. Corey, what are you geeking on? What's got you joy-filled?
Number one, I had some time off this weekend. Not a lot, but I had some time off where I didn't have to do anything. So I fired up the Roku and I turned on Amazon Prime Movies. Because someone told me that one of the movies that scared the shit out of me as a kid is available on there. And it was! Joe, have you ever heard of Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things?
It sounds like good advice, but no, I haven't heard of it.
Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things is a zombie movie from the early 70s. The director went on. That movie was made with his college friends. It cost about $50,000. He went on to do a movie called Porky's. And then he did a movie
That was about the bacon industry.
Then he did a movie called Turk 182, but you may know him from this obscure little failure he had called A Christmas Story. And I had not seen that movie in years and years and years and years. And the first, like, you know, you're watching it as an adult, because I saw it as part of the Pawlikowski Presents the Scary Movie on one of the local channels on Saturday night after midnight. And, you know, back then I was 14. It's scary. It was a newer movie back then, and it was really scary. I watch it now, and I'm, you know, we're all a little more sophisticated, and I know more about film, so I'm seeing the flaws and seeing how bad the acting is until you get to the last half hour where the zombies are coming up out of their graves, and it's like, this is really effective and creepy. There's a whole bunch of kind of obscure movies that are available on Amazon Prime, but there's a slight freaking with it, Joe. Oh my God, their interface is so terrible. It's like, okay, I want to look for spaghetti westerns. Well, what you have to do is go to a spaghetti western that you know, and then go to similar movies and hope that they've got other ones. Or like with this, at least I knew the name of the movie. But if I'm just looking for, you know, early 70s low-budget horror, I'm going to have to go to the internet and look up, because you can only really look up via a movie title. And all the stuff they're going to suggest to you is the new stuff or their TV series. They're not going to suggest. So there's a whole bunch of cool stuff out there. Just good luck finding it. The next thing I am geeking on, I got all caught up on Amazing Spider-Man. And I know you and I were big fans of Dan Slott, and we were worried that when Dan Slott left, because he'd been on the book so long, that Spider-Man would take a step down in quality. Nick Spencer's Spider-Man is funny. It's got action, it's exciting, but it's also funny. And there was the story I read was a three-parter with J. Jonah Jameson, where Spider-Man and J. Jonah Jameson are trying to get out of a death trap. And, you know, it was like an old Spider-Man comic. It was funny. It tapped into all the old stuff, including the fact that J. Jonah Jameson used to build spider slayers and try to kill Spider-Man all the time. And it's just, it's so much fun to read, and it makes me glad that Spider-Man's still in good hands. That's, because it's easy to do mediocre Spider-Man stories, but I'm glad that Marvel knows that Spider-Man, you really can't get away with doing, with half-assing it anymore.
We want whole ass.
Damn right! Wait a minute. Okay, an ass brings me joy. I also got the book Sky Masters, which was Jack Kirby's comic strip from the late 50s. The early parts were inked by the Hunt brothers, and the latter half was inked by Wally Wood. And let me tell you something, man. Jack Kirby inked by Wally Wood just makes me so giddy. It's beautiful stuff. What's the story? I don't know. I'm too busy just looking at the art. just drooling over the art. It's the complete series, so I will eventually sit down and read it cover to cover, but right now I'm just looking at the art, and oh man, I just wish there was more Kirby inked by Wally Wood. If I could go back in time, that's what I'd do. I'd tell Stan Lee, hey.
Hey.
Get rid of Vince Coletta. Pay Wally Wood. Have him in call of Kirby stuff. And then the last thing I am geeking on, I got my box day a little while back. There was the Conan Omnibus in there. And it's the first batch of issues from Conan. And, oh my God, is it gorgeous. Now, there are a couple people online who have been involved in production who are pissing and moaning because what happened is back in the 90s, Barry Windsor Smith was on good terms with Marvel, and he recolored all his early Conan work because he didn't like the colors at the time. And when Marvel reprinted it in the 90s, he recolored it all. And in the Omnibus, they go back to the original coloring. And they're saying that, oh, this is what Barry Windsor Smith wanted, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What the omnibuses are, and if you're listening to the Fantastic Forecast, I go into this, they're reprinting the books exactly as they were. With the Fantastic Four, there's stuff that they stripped out of the reprints. Like, you know, before the Hulk came out, they would have above and below the art on certain pages about how the Hulk is coming. The omnibuses reprint how the books were printed in the best possible way. They're not recoloring them because, you know, if they allowed recolors, Neil Adams would want to recolor and re-ink every goddamn thing he drew.
You artists.
And then there's the last book that came out from Dark Horse is there were two. One is already going for hundreds of dollars, and that's the Colossal King Conan, which is a reprint of the King Conan series in larger format. And that thing was sold out before it came out. But the other book they did is called The Conan Reader, which has a lot of the one-shots and miniseries that Dark Horse did, reprinted a great big thick book, about 800 pages. And, oh man, is that some good stuff. You know, yes, I've got the Conan omnibuses that Dark Horse did where they reprinted their Conan stuff in, I think it's 6 volumes. But the Conan readers just, you know, here are the one-shots and miniseries, and it's just beautiful. Beautiful printing. Unbelievable. They did such a great job on it. And it's funny, I'm reading online about how Conan sales are, and there are some stores that are going, Conan is our biggest hit ever. And there are other stores that are like, what's the big deal about Conan? And I think it has more to do with how the stores pushed it. But, oof. With that, yeah, there's a lot of good Conan stuff out there. And the first two issues of Conan were really good, too. So I'm geeking on Conan's return to Marvel. Believe it or not, kids, you have listened to us blather on about funny books for an hour and a half.
Thank you.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
You know, I'm kind of distraught because I haven't found anybody to say anything nice about Minnesota because, you know, we're going through a deep freeze. There's nothing going on. Wait a minute. Who's that? Who's that in the distance? Holy cow. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Bob Hope. Hit my music.
Thanks for the memory. For shady woodland hikes, for 10-pound walleye pikes, for all your sights and moonlight nights a million miles from Mike's. Thank you so much. And thanks for the memory of broiling campfire steaks, the sound the wild loon makes, canoeing trips, refreshing dips in your 10,000 lakes. Thank you so much.